Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pacharane Nivasesa Sanyavadi Paskatya Desitarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam. Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. September 8th, 2011, in Hilo, Hawaii, Skype classes. This is the appearance day of Srila Jiva Goswami and the appearance day of Vamana Avatar. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, Birth of Emperor Parikshit, Text 14. Hiranyam. Gold. Gum. Cows. Mahim. Land. Graman. Villages. Hasti. Elephants. Asvan. Horses. Nripatihi. The king. Varan. Rewards. Pradat. Gave in charity. Suanam. Good food grains. Cha. And. Viprebhya. Unto the Brahmanas. Prajatirte. On the occasion of giving in charity on the birthday of a son. Saha. He. Tirtavit. One who knows how, when, and where charity is to be given. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Upon the birth of a son, the king, who knew how, where, and when charity should be given, gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food grains to the Brahmanas. Purport. Only the Brahmanas and sannyasis are authorized to accept charity from the householders. In all the different occasions of samskaras, especially during the time of birth, marriage, and death, wealth is distributed to the Brahmanas, because the Brahmanas give the highest quality of service in regard to the prime necessity of humankind. The charity was substantial in the shape of gold, land, villages, horses, elephants, and food grains, with other materials for cooking complete foodstuff. The Brahmanas were not, therefore, poor in the actual sense of the term. On the contrary, because they possessed gold, land, villages, horses, elephants, and sufficient grains, they had nothing to earn for themselves. They would simply devote themselves to the well-being of the entire society. The word tirtavit is significant because the king knew well where and when charity has to be given. Charity is never unproductive or blind. In the Shastras, charity was offered to persons who deserve to accept charity by dint of spiritual enlightenment. The so-called Jaridra Narayana, a misconception of the Supreme Lord by unauthorized persons, is never to be found in the Shastras as the object of charity, nor can a wretched poor man receive much munificent charity in the way of horses, elephants, land, and villages. The conclusion is that the intelligent men, or the Brahmanas, specifically engaged in the service of the Lord, were properly maintained without anxiety for the needs of the body, and the king and other householders gladly looked after all their comforts. It is enjoined in the Shastras that as long as a child is joined with the mother by the navel pipe, the child is considered to be of one body with the mother. But as soon as the pipe is cut and the child is separated from the mother, the purificatory process of Jata Karma is performed. The administrative demigods and past forefathers of the family come to see a newly born child, and such an occasion is specifically accepted as the proper time for distributing wealth to the right persons productively for the spiritual advancement of society. Hiranyam gam mahim graman hastyasvan nirpatim varan pradatswanam javiprebhya prajatirte satirtavit. Upon the birth of a son, the king, of course it was actually his grandson, who knew how, where, and when charity should be given, gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food, grains, to the Brahmanas. So here we see one aspect of a perfect society. Just reading yesterday about how in the African country of Mali, there is a custom, particularly among the women, of giving, that everyone is expected to give to others, not as barter, not as some sort of exchange, but just whatever you have extra that someone needs, you give, and you're expected to give 1 to 2 gifts every day to somebody. And if anybody's particularly rich, people are wondering about it because they think, oh, you must not be very generous in gift giving. And in this way, everybody gets what they need. So we read about in the Nectar of Instruction how the 6 loving exchanges are what nourishes the society of devotees. And that's actually what forms a society, is this give and take. Give and take. So here we see the Brahmanas, and 2 classes here. Prabhupada says Brahmanas and Sannyasis. Of course, it's interesting because Prabhupada says that in a number of places, but we know that the Brahmacharis would also collect charity that they would give to their guru. And the vanaprastas, sometimes they're mostly just living in the forest and what they collect, but they may also live on charity left in the field and different sorts of charity. So basically we have 2 kinds of people who are given charity in the Vedic system. One is somebody who has no family, they're renounced. The brahmacharis, the vanaprastas, the sannyasis, they've renounced everything. They're just simply engaged. They don't want to be engaged in some means of economic development. The brahmacharis engage in study, just like even in modern society, the government gives tax money to schools, which is a similar concept. It doesn't play out the same way, unfortunately, but the government collects tax money and distributes it to the schools, in most countries of the world anyway, so that children can get a free education. Of course, in Vedic times, the children were also fully maintained by the government, and the money given to the teachers was not in the form of a salary. To the sannyasis and the vanaprastas, they're engaged in performing austerities or cultivating knowledge. Again, of course, the brahmacharya is mostly cultivating knowledge. The vanaprasta is performing austerities for purification. The sannyasi is distributing knowledge. So the vanaprasta and the sannyasi doesn't have the ability to earn a livelihood. And in fact, the vanaprasta and sannyasis, generally speaking, are old. They're people past their retirement age when they're no longer obligated to work. And it's not that they're retiring by going to some resort and playing golf, but they're using their retirement years to give knowledge to everyone. So if they have to be concerned about making a living, how can they focus these 3 persons, the students, the retired, the persons, whether vanaprastas or sannyasis, if they have to be focused on earning a livelihood, then how can they focus on their duty to society? How can they give what they need to give to society? So their material needs of those 3 classes are taken care of. then also among the householders, the Brahmana householders are also allowed to accept charity. Now, not all Brahmana householders accept charity exactly. A Brahmana householder could be an astrologer or a physician or a teacher who's maybe living on donations rather than salaries or set fees, but they're still offering some degree of a material service in society in exchange for donations. Whereas the Brahmanas, householder Brahmanas who are engaged just in worshiping the deity and in studying, and they're not doing anything which is going to induce people to give them individual donations, and therefore they also have to be maintained by the Kshatriyas. And we see this sort of thing, again, we see a parallel of it in modern society. If a person is just a scientific researcher for their whole life, then they're often maintained on various government grants. Sometimes they're maintained also from grants from various business organizations. Of course, this is a perversion, because the grants that come from the government or business organizations always have some strings attached to them, so that the so-called brahmanas become the puppets of the person who is maintaining them. But in Maharaj Yudhisthira's time, Maharaj Parikshit's time, it wasn't like that. So the Kshatriyas, they did have to see. I mean, just like the modern times, the government is giving grants, the business is giving grants. First, they look, you have to have a grant application. They have to see that you're actually engaged in brahminical work, not that you're just lying around the house watching television and drinking beer. So Prabhupada would often say that the Kshatriyas had a duty to make sure that anyone who claims to be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas is actually doing that. But if they see that you're a real Brahmana, then the charity is given unconditionally. That is the difference. So modern society, they try to check whether or not you're a real Brahmana, and then they give charity conditionally. In Vedic times, if they've ascertained you're a real Brahmana, they give charity unconditionally. So among those who are in the Grihastha ashram, only the Brahmanas, and then only some of the Brahmanas, can live just on charity without any sort of direct exchange. And those who are in the renounced orders, the Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi, they are also maintained, as Prabhupada will sometimes say, as children of the society, so that they can do their real business. Now, only the Brahmanas would take Sannyas, and only the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas would take Vanaprastha, which means that the Vaishya and the Shudras, who never move out of the Grihastha ashram, would never be recipients of charity. Now here Prabhupada's saying that one shouldn't give charity to the so-called Daridra Narayan, the poor Narayan, but we know also that the Kshatriyas would make sure that everyone in society was taken care of. Even if somebody wasn't a Brahmana, if they were crippled, if they were handicapped in some way, they'd also be taken care of. But they did not have some sort of system where able-bodied persons, instead of working, were just simply given handouts, which is what's going on in the modern society. Rather, the Kshatriyas had the duty to make sure that everyone was employed. So like the modern welfare system, if instead of welfare, the government gave people some land, government owned so much land, if they gave them some land and some seeds in a little cottage, and they gave them some skills, taught them some skills, okay, here now, maintain yourself. Right? We've seen that the welfare given to single women actually induces the men to be irresponsible, for example. And the handouts given to poor people induces people to be irresponsible and take to intoxication. So that's not what's recommended. So this is, of course, significant for us because all of us have to maintain our livelihood. And if we know what varna and ashram we're in, we can understand what is the proper means to maintain a livelihood. One who is a brahmana is very degraded if their means of livelihood puts them under the control of somebody else. And Srila Prabhupada generally wanted that his devotees not earn their livelihood in ways that had them under the control of somebody else, where somebody could compromise their truthfulness and their behavior. And of course, this is also important to us because we have a natural desire to give. The desire to give gifts, the desire to give charity. This is inherent in us. And we should know to whom to give charity. And we should know to whom to give gifts. I mean, even in our devotee sangha, we often have situations where those who are trying to dedicate themselves wholly and solely to spiritual pursuits, there's no mechanism to maintain them in the society. You know, I know when we were running a Gurukula, Prabhupada first gave instructions about running a Gurukula, where he said that the temple should all give something. Eventually he said the householders should all give something. But if you run a Gurukula and you depend upon kind of random charity, everything's going to close. You know, Prabhupada talked about the old Gurukulas where you would just sit under a tree or in a corridor and teach. But in modern society, you have to have a government-approved building, which costs a lot of money to build and a lot of money to maintain, and you have to buy books, which may be $20-$30 a textbook for the children. So all these are very expensive, and people have the mood. If you just said, okay, we're going to teach for free, just give some charity, then maybe they'd give you a sari once in a month or two, right? And then you'd no way that you could pay the mortgage. So this is a problem, and this is a problem in general. We see in this among the society of devotees, because we haven't really established a society with kshatriyas like Maharaj Yudhisthira, who themselves are giving in charity to the brahmanas and the renunciates, having collected it in taxes. And because we haven't really established a vaishya class, we're starting to, but we haven't really established a vaishya class who's also giving directly in charity. Therefore, it's very, very difficult to live in the modern society as a renunciate or as a brahmana. It's very difficult. And therefore, we find many, many devotees who are brahminically inclined that it's so difficult. I mean, there's no question of getting gold and horses. And interesting here that the kshatriyas would sometimes give a brahmana a village. What does that mean? Does that mean that all the taxes from that village would go to a particular brahmana? We can't imagine that the brahmana would be collecting the taxes and running the village, then that would degrade the brahmana into kshatriya. But interesting here. And also this purport is quite interesting because there's many, many places where Prabhupada says that if a grahastha brahmana wants to strictly live on charity, which is not the only way for a brahmana to live, but if a grahastha brahmana wants to live strictly on charity, then one of his obligations is to give away at the end of every day what he doesn't need for that day, and to keep himself in a poverty-stricken condition. But here we see Prabhupada saying that the brahmanas were not poor in the actual sense of the term, that they might have possessed great facility, which they used just simply so that they didn't have any anxieties. So here we see how we can have one piece of how we can have a perfect society and one piece of how to solve the modern economic problems. The modern economic problems are based not only on false money, right? Paper money that only has value as long as the government says it has value. It doesn't have any intrinsic value, with false wealth, right? The so-called stock market, it's all just numbers. I mean, you're not really generating wealth. It's the whole system is based on falsity. And not only do we have that problem with the system, but just to have a society where the main value of the society is money rather than dharma is corrupting everyone. So someone gave our grandkids this game called Life. You go through and do different things in life. You get married, you get an education, you do this and that. And you know who wins? Whoever has the most money when they retire. That's the winner. So that modern society is like that. You know, they have a little bumper sticker. Whoever dies with the most toys wins. So we may also be influenced by this way of thinking. We may be thinking of success in terms of money, and it's not even real money, not even real wealth. Whereas in a proper society, success was based on dharma. Am I doing my dharma, and am I facilitating others doing their dharma through a give and take policy, taking gifts and giving gifts, taking gifts and giving gifts, collecting and giving away. The Shudras are collecting those skills, and they're using the skills to benefit society. The Vaishyas are generating wealth. They're taking the wealth that's inherent in the land and the seas and the animals, and they're converting it to a usable form. They're converting the ground and the seeds into food. They're converting the mineral deposits and the metal deposits into items of use. They're converting the energy of the animals into milk and into labor. So they're generating wealth, and then they're distributing it. The kshatriyas, they're collecting wealth, and then they're redistributing it, and the brahmanas are collecting knowledge and redistributing it. And everyone is giving generously, generously to everyone else without consideration of how will I be taken care of. It's not only that the brahmanas are doing that, but the whole society, Prabhupada says this many times, the whole society has what's called it, what he calls a brahminical culture. I was just reading a purport yesterday where Prabhupada talked about brahminical culture, kshatriya culture, vaishya culture. In one sense, each of the varnas has their own culture. But in another sense, the general mood of the brahmanas, that of being mahatmas, not kripanas, that of being generous, that of being giving, it's pervading the whole society. So whatever I have, let me share. That's the opposite of envy. Envy is whatever I have, let me keep for myself. Right? Let me just keep to myself, and I might give a little to others, but I want to make sure that nobody is equal to me in opulence, what to speak of greater than me. So this mood that what has been given to me by Krishna has been given to me not only for my own personal maintenance, but also for me to distribute in some way. Whatever talents I have, whatever abilities I have, whatever opulences I have, they're meant to be given. And again, this, if it's done by society in general, if everyone has this mood of, okay, I can keep what I need for my sustenance and I give, then everyone is amply provided for. And that's a family. Prabhupada talked about he wanted ISKCON to have a family culture of love and trust. That's what happens in a family, at least a functional family, maybe not a dysfunctional family. In a family, you share. You're not calculating. I mean, people like John Gray talk about how the wife keeps score and how the husband keeps score. But, you know, really, where there's love, you're not keeping score. When there's real love, when there's real affection, then you're giving. You don't have to consider, how will I get back? Because if everybody's giving, then everybody will get back. Of course, the perfection of this only exists in Vaikuntha, where there is no envy, and there's no greed, and there's no fear. Because as long as there's envy and greed and fear, then I'm not going to be willing 100% to engage in these kinds of activities. So this verse and purport very nicely connect to the fact that it is the appearance day of Vamana Dev, Chalayase Vikramame Balima Bhuta Vamana Paranakanira Danicha Janapavana Keshavadrita Vamana Rupa Jaya Jagadishari. So Bali Maharaj was a kshatriya. He was a kshatriya in the family of the demons. But he was also very charitable, and he specifically understood. I mean, in olden times, even the atheists and the demons understood that you had to support the brahmanas. I mean, again, even in modern society, the atheists understand that society has to support the scientists and the teachers. Even the demons. Of course, they want to control the scientists and the teachers through their support. That's something else. But at least they have this understanding that scientists and teachers are necessary in society, researchers are necessary in society, and in order to do their work without hindrance, they have to be supported. So Bali Maharaj also understood the value of sacrifice. He had conquered the kingdom of Indra, and he was engaged in performing sacrifices to keep that kingdom, and those sacrifices were indeed for Vishnu. Of course, Bali Maharaj was a Vaishnava, although externally he was in the family of demons. And although he had accumulated some attachment to his possessions of owning the universe, not so surprising. When Sugriva got back his kingdom, he also became attached. But it's not so surprising that even a great devotee of the Lord, when put in a position of great opulence, may become bewildered, at which point the Lord helps him. So Bali's doing this sacrifice. Meanwhile, all the demigods, they are thrown out of their kingdom. Because Bali was so powerful, having gotten the blessings of the brahmanas, that the demigods couldn't do anything against him, especially since Indra had insulted his guru. When Brihaspati had entered Indra's assembly, Indra had ignored him. So this is how you get power. You get power by respecting those who are dear to the Lord. then there's nobody that will, Prabhupada says, nobody can interfere with the happiness of such a person. So Aditi, who's also one of the demigods, she's the mother of the demigods, she was lamenting. And just like any of us, if some enemy throws us out of our house, takes away our wealth, takes away our reputation, our possessions, takes away our service, we'd also be unhappy. This is natural. And when her husband came back from his trance, he found her unhappy. And interestingly enough, he said to her, this unhappiness is all illusory. Who are your sons anyway? What is the value of material opulence? But okay, even if you're sarvakama, moksha kama, you still worship Krishna. So he said, the only person who can help you is Lord Vishnu. I can't help you. This is a bona fide guru. A bona fide guru doesn't say, I can help you, I'm your best friend. Bona fide guru says, only Krishna can help you. So Aditi did a worship of Krishna. For 12 days, she drank only milk, and she engaged in elaborate deity worship and distribution of prasad and chanting of mantras, specifically Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And Prabhupada remarks that in many respects, the program that Aditi did in our ISKCON society, we're doing every day. Sankirtan Yajna, deity worship, distribution of prasadam, and only eating of prasadam. And he also mentions things like Ekadasi. Of course, yesterday was Ekadasi. So at the end of these 12 days, Aditi saw Lord Vishnu face to face. He appeared before her. We should also mention that Kasyapa Muni, her husband, told her, among many things, that she should sing and dance for the Lord. I mention this because someone wrote me yesterday and said that in some places people are saying that women shouldn't be dancing in the kirtan, that that's a Western thing. So Prabhupada often talked about the men and women dancing in the kirtan and said when the men and women are dancing in the kirtan, they forget sex desire. And Prabhupada was very pleased that the women were dancing in the kirtan. And Kasyapa Muni also told Aditi to regularly offer dandavats. The word is there, dandavats. And when Aditi saw Lord Vishnu, it is also mentioned that she offered full dandavats. So this is another strange thing that's happened in the society of devotees, that we've somehow, although when Srila Prabhupada was on the planet, the women offered dandavats. We were somehow told that it's not proper for women to offer dandavats. Actually, if you go to Sri Rangam, you will see stone carvings, 1,000-year-old stone carvings in the floor of a man and a woman side by side offering full dandavats to the deities. Anyway, so Aditi saw Lord Vishnu and she was overwhelmed with ecstasy. And the Lord told her, I know what you want. And he said, it's very interesting. He said, what you want is for the wives of the demons to be lamenting as widows. Interesting. So obviously Aditi had a fighting mentality. After all, her son Indra is the chief kshatriya in the universe. So she also had this fighting mood that she wanted her enemies to not just be kicked out, but to be killed. She wanted to take pleasure in seeing their wives become widows. How interesting. Anyway, still the Lord said, all right, he said, I will fulfill your desire. He said, both because I'm pleased with your bhakti and because I'm pleased with your husband's austerities. He said, but it's a problem for me because Bali is favored by the devotees. And I can't interfere. If someone's favored by the devotees, then I don't do anything to interfere. But I have to fulfill your desire. So Krishna loves doing things like this. You know, he loves setting up his lila so that the situation is impossible. And when I was a child, I used to watch a television show, Mission Impossible, you know, where the government gives these people some job to do in the service of their country that's impossible. And of course, they always do it. So Krishna also likes this kind of thing. Krishna likes to have a situation where it's impossible, and he does it anyway. You know, saving the residents of Vrindavan from Indra was impossible, and he did it. Saving Prahlad Maharaj and keeping the benedictions of Lord Brahma is impossible, and yet he did it. So keeping the rule that one who's protected by the brahmanas, they cannot be harmed by anyone. And at the same time, fulfilling the desire of Aditi. So how is he going to do that? He's going to do that by removing the protection of the brahmanas. That's what he's going to do. He's going to create a situation where the brahmanas who protected Bali will voluntarily withdraw their protection. In other words, Krishna's not going to break that shield of brahminical protection which he himself has created. He's not going to do that. He's going to therefore keep his rule and at the same time fulfill Aditi. So he also had, just like here Parikit in today's verse, had this ceremony of birth, the Jatakarman ceremony. And Prabhupada says here that the administrative demigods and past forefathers of the family come to see a newly born child. So I thought, well, I've seen a lot of newly born children. I never saw the demigods or the forefathers show up. But evidently, when this ceremony is done at the cutting of the umbilical cord, as Prabhupada so sweetly calls it here, the navel pipe, when that ceremony is done, part of that ceremony is inviting the demigods and the forefathers to see the newly born child. And if the ceremony is done successfully, they actually show up. So I don't know if anybody can do that ceremony successfully anymore. But Vamandev's Jatakarman ceremony was particularly interesting because he also received the sacred thread. It was also his Upanayan ceremony. So generally a newborn baby is not given the sacred thread. But Vamana appeared first as four-handed Vishnu and then as a little dwarf Brahmin boy. And as a little dwarf Brahmin boy, he was given presents by all the demigods. Right? And as a brahmachari, he could also accept charity, and therefore the wife of Lord Shiva gave him his first alms. So he had all these gifts. And then as an initiated brahmana, he started performing a jagya. He then saw that Bali was performing a jagya, and so he went to Bali's jagya to ask for charity. So this is also what we're seeing in today's verse, that the local brahmanas found out, oh, Maharaj Yudhisthira is performing a jagya, performing a samskar for the Jatakarman ceremony. So we can go there, and this is a time when he'll get charity. Well, this is the way to celebrate something. Celebrate. Prabhupada said even our birthday, we should celebrate our birthday by giving in charity. You know, the Western idea of birthday is just that I get. The Vedic idea of birthday is that I give. You may get also, but the Vedic idea is that that's a time to give in charity. So Vamandev goes to this sacrifice, and although he's a little boy, the whole earth is trembling at every step that he takes, and his effulgence is dwarfing the beauty and effulgence of the personalities there. I mean, we're talking about Sukracharya, who's also the planet Venus. We're talking about great personalities. And they were all became insignificant as soon as Vamandev entered. And interesting, because Bali Maharaj says to Vamandev something very similar to this purport. Here Prabhupada says that Yudhisthira, in this verse actually, that he gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food grains. So very similarly, Bali Maharaj offers these sort of gifts to Vamandev. He said, would you like to marry a Brahmin girl, Viprakanya? Would you like to have villages? Would you like to have wealth? Another little note we can make, kind of a side note, is recently I've been reading a number of devotees say that women don't have varna, but we find that Bali Maharaj offers Vamandev, who's a brahmana, he says, would you like me to find some Brahmin girl to give you? He doesn't say, you know, just any girl. Anyway, so Vamandev then says, listen, I'm a brahmana, and I'm supposed to be satisfied with just what I need to maintain myself. And indirectly, he's telling Bali, hey, Bali, you blew it. You took a lot more than what you need, and you really took things you weren't supposed to take. I mean, this was another person's time to be Indra, and you've taken it by force. Just have what you need. Be satisfied that the Lord will take care of you. This is one of the main aspects, not only the giving culture of Vedic culture, but this concept of doing your duty and being satisfied with whatever comes as a result of doing your duty. Not doing any cheating in order to get more than what comes as a natural result of doing your duty. So you know what your duty is among the varnas and the ashram, you do that duty, and then whatever comes, comes. Whatever comes, comes. Not cheating. One of my professors had us read a book called The Cheating Culture, how in modern society I think, rife with cheating, whether it's in academia, whether it's in sports, whether it's in medicine, whether it's in politics. Cheating, 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 cheating. It was really funny. After I read the book, I went to the professor and I said, listen, I want to tell you that some of the students in one of my other classes are cheating. And he looked at me and he laughed. He said, everyone in this class has come to me with some sort of a confession. I said, yeah, I saw them cheating, but I didn't report them, and now I don't know what to do. No, that's not the mood that Vamadeva's saying. He's saying instead of cheating, one should be satisfied with what one gets. So all of a sudden, Sukracharya becomes alert, and he's thinking, wait a minute, asking this little dwarf, asking for 3 paces of land by his own measurement. I mean, that's not even enough practically to lie down on. You know, that's not very good. Oh, I should also say, Bali Maharaj says something amazing to Vamadeva. He said, "What you should ask me for something so great that you'll never have to ask anyone else for anything ever." So this is a symptom of Bali's pride, because the only person who can make such an offer is God. You know, we should never think, I'm going to give you something so wonderful that you'll never need anything else. We don't have that in our power. So Sukracharya then told Bali, wait a minute, this is Vishnu in disguise. He's the son of Kasyapa and Aditi, and he's going to cover the universe with his 3 steps. That's why the Kshatriyas had Brahmanas, because the Brahmanas actually knew what was going on. And Bali said, well, first of all, I've already promised him. Sukracharya said, doesn't matter. He said, you haven't said Om yet. And anyway, you can't promise to give somebody all of your wealth. He said, that's not, she said, you shouldn't give so much charity that you yourself become an object of charity, that you yourself become poverty stricken. So generally, Prabhupada says that is true. He says that is a religious principle, and Bali even accepts this as a religious principle. But at the same time, Prabhupada says that if you become poverty stricken due to giving profuse charity to the right persons, you become glorious. Said if you become poverty-stricken because you're a gambler or a drunkard, that's not glorious. But to become poverty-stricken by giving everything to a good cause, that is a glorious way to live. And we see that even among the materialists, people who voluntarily give away everything. What to speak among the devotees. We could glorify so many devotees who've given away everything for the service of the Lord. And then Bali Maharaj also says something, one of my favorite verses in the Bhagavatam. He says, why not give to this Brahmana everything I'm destined to lose at death anyway? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Aham, I am death. So the whole concept of sannyas is that you voluntarily die even while living. In this way you conquer death. So why not give everything to Vamana? So Sukracharya then becomes angry and he withdraws his shield of brahminical protection from Bali, curses Bali. Yeah, interestingly enough, first he's warning Bali, you're going to lose all your opulences, and then he gets so angry he curses Bali to lose all his opulences. So Sukracharya, although he's a great Brahmana, we offer him all respects, still he is materialistic. And a materialistic person doesn't even think of his own self-interest, because Sukracharya's concern about Bali's losing his wealth was that he thought, well, how will I be maintained? And then he himself cursed Bali to lose his wealth. So now that the brahminical shield is removed, then Vamadeva can take everything Bali has and still respect the principle that brahminical protection cannot be broken by anyone, even the Lord. And he expands into a universal form, incredible description, how each part of the universe was in a different part of his body. And in 2 steps, he covers everything. Because a step is not just where you put your feet, but it's where your body is in the sky also. 3-dimensional. So he covers everything. He even Paranakanira Janita Janapavana, with his toenails, he breaks through the outer covering. At which point Lord Brahma also bathes the Lord's lotus feet with his Kamandalu. So the Ganges is then the combination of the Lord himself, of Brahma's Kamandalu water washing the Lord's lotus feet, and the causal ocean, the Viraja, the spiritual water, leaking through the coverings of the universe with the piercing of the nail of Vamadeva. And after doing this, Vamadeva again resumes his tiny size, just like Krishna showed the universal form and then resumed his original size. And then he arrests Bali Maharaj. He says, you're a liar, you're a cheater, you promised me 3 steps, you only gave 2. So this was a further correction of Bali. Bali thought he had so much to give that he could give somebody such that that person would never need to ask anything from anyone else ever. And instead he found he couldn't even give a simple promise of 3 steps. Then the demons start attacking Vamana, and Bali tells him, stop. This is not the right time. If you try to attack now, you'll lose. We've lost the protection of the Brahmanas. Go to the lower planets. And then to add insult, Vamandeva arranges Garuda ties up Bali Maharaj, arrests him for failure to fulfill his promise. And Bali Maharaj even says, he says, who chastises a subordinate like this? He says, what mother, father, brother, government official chastises a subordinate like this? He said, but still, I humbly accept your chastisement. And then Bali Maharaj says, Lord Brahma comes, Prahlad Maharaj, Bali's grandfather comes, and then Bali's wife comes. And she says to Vamandeva, yes, my husband's a fool. He thought that he was the possessor. Oh, this is after Bali says, sorry, I've skipped something. So Bali Maharaj had said, Vamandeva, you can put your 3rd step on my head. And still he's arrested. So his wife, she comes and says, my husband thinks he's a fool. My husband's a fool. He thinks he owns his property and he owns his body. He thinks that by giving his property and his body to you, that he's actually given you something. But all these were yours. But all 3 of them, Prahlad Maharaj, Bali's wife, and Lord Brahma, they all beg for Vamandeva to show mercy to Bali. They give different arguments. Then Vamandeva, of course, releases Bali, and he gives him opulence greater than that of Indra, and he also reveals to him that in a forthcoming Manvantar, that Bali will become the Indra. So this whole pastime of Vamandeva, of course, there's many points here, many points in this pastime of Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Parikshit. But the essential thing that we can look at is that when I do the right thing, when I do what I'm supposed to do, when I do my duty, whether it's my material duty or my spiritual duty, Bali Maharaj did both his material and spiritual duty, as did Maharaj Yudhisthira, then I will be amply cared for. I don't need to have any anxiety. As Krishna says to Arjuna, fight for the sake of fighting without anxieties for gain and safety. Nir yoga kshema, he says in the 2nd chapter. Why yoga kshema vaham yaham? The Krishna will take care. You say, oh, this Krishna, he's Hari. He can take everything away, like he took everything away from Bali. Oh, he took away to give him something greater, that's all. You know, like spit the chewing gum out of your mouth so I can give you a cookie. So if we did, although Prabhupada says in the story of Bali that the real mercy is to be able to use the gifts of the Lord without attachment, without a sense of proprietorship, that if Krishna sees that we're becoming entangled, in order to give us the real wealth, he may take away things in order to give us something greater. We don't have to be miserly. Whatever we are, whether we're Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, whether the person coming to beg charity from us is a Brahmana or God himself. I mean, God himself has come to all of us and said, Sarvadharman Prichaja, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja, give me the ultimate charity of Atmanivedanam. And do we hesitate? Oh, can I really give charity to this devotee? Can I really help out this person? Can I really give everything to Krishna? Can I really just do an honest livelihood and depend and be satisfied with what I get due to my own destiny? Maybe I have to cheat a little bit. But let me do what's right, even if I'm criticized. Bali Maharaj was so unbelievable. The immediate result Bali Maharaj got from doing the right thing. Because he did the right thing, because he performed his ultimate Sanatan Dharma, his guru rejected him and cursed him. His wife and his grandfather agreed that he should have been arrested and condemned him. His followers left. He was humiliated in front of everyone. When Prahlad Maharaj came in, he was tied up and he felt, Prabhupada says, such shame. He bowed his head in shame that here he was arrested. So it could be that the initial result of our doing the right thing is shame, embarrassment, poverty, rejection of family members. It could be. But the ultimate result will be the great mercy of the Lord. The great mercy of the Lord on every level, material and spiritual. So our business is just to have this faith. If I do my duty, if I do my duty, if I'm charitable, what does Krishna say in the 18th chapter? Sacrifice, austerities, and charity should never be given up. It purifies even the great souls. My whole life should actually be one of charity. My whole life should be one of giving to others. After all, what is my life? My body, my possessions, my life air? It's all Krishna. What is it other than Krishna? Krishna is the fire of digestion. Krishna is the air of life. Bhumir apanalo vayu kam mano buddhavacha. Krishna is all the elements of my body. Krishna is all the elements of my subtle body. Krishna is all my abilities. Everything. So my whole life should be a giving in charity to Krishna and to those who are dependent so that they can perform their devotional activities and accepting the gifts that the Lord arranges for me to receive as his prasadam, as his kindness, and to accept whatever consequences happen. Marobi rakobi yo echetamar. You can kill me, you can save me. Lord, it doesn't matter. I'm going to do the right thing without fear. Without fear of poverty, without fear of defamation. You know, it was interesting because Bali Maharaj said that one reason he was going to give everything to Vamana is so as not to be defamed for being dishonest. But at least temporarily, he became defamed. Bali Maharaj was defamed for doing the right thing. Later he became glorified, but at least there was some time when he was being defamed and criticized by Vamandev himself for doing exactly the right thing. Why? Of course, as a means to bring Bali to a higher platform of devotional service, to bring Bali to a deeper platform of a loving exchange. Sometimes what we have needs to be torn away from us before we are able to accept something that is higher. So we can look, am I situated properly? Am I doing my own duty, both spiritually and materially? Am I participating in this give and take exchange, at least among the devotees? Am I satisfied with what comes of its own accord? And am I willing to give everything to Krishna? It may not be quite so dramatic that he comes and knocks on your door with a begging bowl in his hand. How funny. Prabhupada said that the Lord wanted to enjoy some humor with his devotees. So imagine if you go to wake up your deities in the morning and your Lord is sitting there with a begging bowl in his hand. Can you please give me some charity? But are we willing really to give everything with faith that Krishna will take care of us? Of course, giving everything may be a little scary, but maybe we can at least increase our charity a little bit, increase our dependence on Krishna a little bit. Surrender a little bit, step by step, as a gradual process. What can be, you know, Bali Maharaj is famous for Atmanivedanam. So maybe I'm not willing to give everything. Maybe I don't have enough faith to give everything. But at least maybe, what's the next thing I can give? What's the next step I can take? And being willing to let go of the previous step so that I can advance to the next step. So it was funny when I was first looking, thinking, oh, okay, I just got assigned a regular Bhagavatam verse on Vamadeva's appearance day. And when I looked at the verse, I was realizing that this verse and purport completely fit with the story of Vamadeva and Bali Maharaj. So we can have now questions, comments, corrections, chastisements, additions, subtractions.
Mother Irma, I'd like to ask you a question. What does it mean, practically, Atmanivedanam, to surrender everything to Krishna? How should we understand that?
Well, there's six parts of surrender. One is that if something will help us in our relationship with Krishna, then we should accept it even if it's difficult. And this is, of course, exemplified by Bali, that giving everything to Vamandev would help him to get closer to Krishna. In fact, he said to Sukracharya, he said, "You're always telling me to worship Vishnu in the yajna, and then when Vishnu personally comes, you're telling me not to give him anything?" So if there's some favorable way to advance our Krishna consciousness, I mean, on a beginning level, that means no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, 16 rounds with as much focus and love as I can do at whatever stage I'm at, etc., offering my food, you know, those are favorable things. But favorable, accepting what's favorable may mean other things, may mean somebody gives you a preaching opportunity and you accept it. There's some opportunity that comes to increase the quality and quantity of your service. You accept it. Then rejecting what's unfavorable. So rejecting what's unfavorable, particularly giving up intoxication, meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, giving up asat sangha tyag, giving up the association of non-devotees, television, radio, movies, magazines, newspapers. I mean, we need to know who's president and what war is going on, but not to become absorbed in gramya kata. To give up overeating, to give up over-collecting, and even to give up anything that's preventing our nice relationship with Krishna. Basically, you know, if you're going to have, you have a relationship with somebody in this world, and in order to spend time with them, you may sometimes have to give up activities that you really want to do. You know, you put aside your book to spend time with your child. So to reject anything that's coming in the way of that relationship. Then to have humility. Humility means I'm just a very insignificant living entity who has, by my own choice, fallen in the material world, and I can't demand anything of Krishna. And I'm not going to take, as Prabhupada has said, the satisfaction of being honored by others. There's some satisfaction in being honored by others, but I give that up. The only person that whose recognition I'm seeking is Krishna's. Prabhupada said, if you don't seek to be recognized by Krishna, your life is condemned. So instead of wanting to be recognized by the world may recognize you, the world may not recognize you. We were looking at some videos of the progression of the English language, and Mr. Tyndall, I think it was, who produced one of the first Bibles in English, was considered a heretic. The church considered him such a heretic that they exhumed his bones and burned them and scattered the ashes to try to prevent him from going to heaven. But the Bible he produced is the basis of all the English Bibles in the world. So you may do something that's where Krishna recognizes you, but others may not recognize you. Haridas Thakur, Nam Acharya, but the local government head ordered him to be killed by beating in 23 marketplaces. Right? Who was recognizing Srila Prabhupada in India? Even his godbrothers mostly. They didn't appreciate him. They didn't facilitate him. So this is humility. Humility is I care about Krishna recognizing me. It doesn't matter to me whether others recognize me. And I'm honest in my relationship with Krishna. Okay, then the next item of full surrender is that I depend on the Lord for my maintenance. Now, this doesn't mean necessarily, although it could mean that I sit around and just chant all day and wait for food to come. It could mean that. There are devotees who have lived like that. But what it means is what I talked about, that I do the duty that's given to me. I try to do the duty that's given to me in the most expert way possible. I pay attention to the details. I really try to do a first-class job, even if it's a very small service.
This service is provided by freeconferencing.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound. This menu will repeat.
So even if it's a very small service, yesterday I was working on something.
Access code accepted. There are 9 participants in this call. conference. This conference is being recorded.
So yesterday I was working on
a... Announce yourself.
Pretty calm. You stay on until I get it right back. That's following.
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Okay, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
I was
working on this book, and people had submitted some stories. Some devotees had submitted stories, and I needed to change things over to have diacritics. So changing everything to have diacritics is a long, tedious, boring job. And I was tempted to just send it out without diacritics. And then I thought, you know, whatever service we're given, we give to the best of our ability. So we do that, and we trust that Krishna will maintain us. If I do my service to the best of my ability, then Krishna will take care of me. I don't have any anxieties for maintenance of myself or my family. Next item of surrender is that I trust that Krishna will protect me. I don't have to make a lot of plans for my own protection. Now, I may have to make some plans for protection as part of my service. So it's part of my service to take care of my health. It's part of my service if I'm a householder to have some savings for my family. It's part of my service if I'm a householder to have a home that protects me from the elements, and so forth and so on. But I'm not thinking that any of these things are going to protect me. I see them as fallible soldiers. And emotionally, psychologically, I only depend on the Lord to protect me. And the last item of self-surrender, ironically, is self-surrender, that I give Krishna my whole self. I'm not holding anything back. So one of Radharani's friends was teasing her in this way. She said, if you've already sold an elephant, you don't haggle over the price of the goad used to control the elephant. So I've already said to Krishna, my dear Lord, from this day on I am yours. I've surrendered to Guru. I've taken vows of initiation. So I don't haggle with Krishna. Oh, Krishna, I don't know. Can I keep this 1 hour every day for me? Can I keep this 1 hour for Maya? Can I keep this one part of my life for Maya and just give you the rest of it? No, giving out everything without consideration. So those are the six items of Atmanivedanam.
Very nice. Thank you very much for that answer. Yeah, Bruce, I'm sorry. Those on pre-conferencing, I don't know how long you were out. Sorry. This is all recorded, so I missed any of that.
Anybody else?
Mother Gandhari, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the point about Daridra Narayan, there are a group of people, actually, and they're saying that their service to God is service to poor people, and that's what Prabhupada is mentioning here, because they always mention Daridra Narayan. So they actually mean that those poor people are representative of Narayan, and they wholeheartedly serve them, thinking that they're worshipping Narayan. Just like, you know, just like we have groups of impersonalists or Sunyavadis. Similarly, there are some groups of people that they think that small children or babies are a form of Narayan. So these people are also, actually, it's a whole group. When they worship, when they serve poor people by giving them charity, they are saying that they are worshipping Narayan. So that's what they mean. Like, worship of poor people is worship of Narayan. So as if Narayan is poor, that's what Prabhupada is trying to say here.
Yes,
how
thank
can
you.
Narayan be poor when they equate poverty to Narayan? That's what I mean. Daridra means poor.
Yes,
so anyway,
yes.
I shared that.
Thank you very much. Anybody else?
Yes, I was reading something about the same, because it was mentioned in the purport. It's a very important term to understand it. And so we... of course, distribute prasadam, considering every living entity being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And even in feeding the poor, we distribute prasadam. You know, like Indradumna Swami went down and explained to the Sri Lankan government after the tsunami that he had the capacity to organize to feed 50,000 a day, and the government took him up on it. And of course, all that was prasadam. The Prabhupada also says in this section that in Kali Yuga there's a scarcity of food almost every year, and thus philanthropists spend lavish. ministry of Feed the Poor. Latest news is 750,000 in Somalia of the 8 million people there are now at risk of starvation because of a drought. So he also decries the Ramakrishna mission for collecting funds to show compassion on the poor by feeding them. And this Ramakrishna mission, they use this term Dravida Narayan in their collection. The Vikkhananda uses this term. And the Mayavadi, of course, is saying everyone's a Narayan. So the rich Narayan feeds the poor Narayan. And Prabhupada made a joke also about how they're, you know, following that same Mayavad idea that all jivas are Narayan. The one Dravida Narayan is killing the goat Dravida Narayan. You know, so
right.
It's pretty sad philosophy.
Thank you.
I just thought I'd
can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. There is a letter that Srila Prabhupada replied to the secretary of the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund back in 1972. At that time, there was a drought in Andhra Pradesh, and millions of people were starving. And so the letter was, you know, saying how terrible it was, and that your Swamiji, your society could do great things by helping the effort. And if you would like to distribute prasadam to the millions, they would appreciate it. And with Madhava Seva is Madhava Seva. So I was amazed at the letter that Srila Prabhupada sent back. It was scathing, anyway, in my opinion. But he told them that what they were planning would not be successful, that they have to show example by joining this movement and pleasing the Supreme Lord, because otherwise it would be completely useless. My question is this. Sometimes I get the impression that people in general may see the Krishna consciousness movement as being uncaring and brutal. Or is that something we should just not be concerned about? How people perceive us?
Well, we have some concern about how people perceive us, but the main thing that's lacking right now is we haven't established a society. The people who are responsible for these sorts of things are the kshatriyas, not the brahmanas. That is not the business of the brahmanas. It's not that the college professors and the scientists in their laboratories who are receiving grant money from the government in order to engage in the cultivation of knowledge, they are not the ones who are responsible to make sure that there's that the starving people are taken care of. That's the responsibility of the kshatriyas. The kshatriyas are the super fathers in society. Now, the brahmanas are responsible in the sense that they're supposed to tell the kshatriyas to engage in yajna. They're supposed to lead the people in yajna, which brings prosperity for everybody. Why? Because when you perform yajna, as explained in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, then the demigods are satisfied, Krishna is satisfied, and then they provide all the necessities. If the government refuses to engage in yajna, the so-called secular government, where there's no religious sacrifice done with government money, and then without actually satisfying the suppliers, you know, it's kind of like, okay, we're not going to pay our money to the electric power supply. We're going to rig up our own independent power supplies. So the job of the brahmanas is to advise the kshatriyas how to have a society where there's no want or scarcity. Our distribution of prasadam is not for the purpose of public relief effort. Our distribution of prasadam is, although it may be seen like that sometimes, but our purpose is to engage everybody in the Sankirtan Yajna. So I think the reason that people may see us as sometimes cold and uncaring is we haven't really established a kshatriyas in society that are listening to the brahmanas. Prabhupada's main interest is in terms of society was in having the devotees act as brahmanas. So Ravindra Suprabhu so nicely explains this in his essay, it's still up on Dandavats, that Prabhupada's idea was that all of the devotees would come to the platform of pure devotional service, the Vasudeva platform, beyond the modes of material nature. Mam chayovya vicharina bhakti yogina sevate sagunan samatipchaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. That we would all be in Sudasattva, the Vasudeva platform. And how would we act in society then? We would act as the brahmanas. Prabhupada had the goal that all of us would become liberated souls who were then acting as brahmanas. And then, although we would be above brahmanas, and therefore we would not need to engage in any of these activities directly. As his preaching went on, Prabhupada saw that we weren't going to all come to the liberated platform quite so fast or easily as he envisioned. And then he said, okay, well, you can also work as Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras while you're working on becoming Vaishnavas. So we haven't even in our devotional sanghas really established a society where there's Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas are the ones who are in charge of social welfare work. What to speak of connecting with the Kshatriyas of the world where we act as their brahminical advisors. So if some governments of the world want to engage in social welfare work, it's not that they ask us to go out and do the social welfare work with the money that we've collected for Jagya. No, what they should do is they should ask us to be the advisors as to how they can use their collected tax money in Jagya, how they can employ people according to their natural occupations, how they can revert back to a simpler society where there can be full employment, where people can be employed in natural, genuine ways of producing wealth, where there can be a more equal distribution of wealth. And then these problems will only occur on a very small scale. There's always going to be some poor people in society because people have different karma. You're never going to totally eliminate poverty in society. But certainly there shouldn't be a situation where so many people are lacking even the basic necessities of life. You know, the poor section of society, they may not live gorgeously, but they should certainly live.
This service is provided by freeconferencing.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound. This menu will repeat.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know why it keeps on dropping.
That's all right. I think I'll just end here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.